quit.
Well, now, by golly, I got my mom moved in. I got my wife moved in. Now I'm ready to go.
Well, she's already moved in before you stayed.
Oh, well, no, sir. It was in kind of a rough shape here, and I just had to give her a hand. She was all by herself. That colored gal went home, and she didn't have anybody to help her. And I figured that if I did this...
Now, what happened to the colored girl? Why didn't you keep her?
Well, because she had two children, and she had to get back to them, so we had to get her back. She could only stay a week up here at Mary Margaret. Where are you now?
I'm at Whiteout.
Oh, you're back from Texas?
Yeah.
Well, when'd you get in?
Just now.
Well, I'll be. Gosh, sir, I'm glad to have you back. I've been here with my little daughter, and I've been working. I went to the office yesterday and worked, and I got a lot of your business done. Got some all things cleared away for you.
What do you mean, your little daughter? Isn't she getting bigger every day?
She really is, sir. She really is. I'm just tickled pink with her. She's a beautiful child, if I do say so. How do you feel?
Oh, bird's sick. Got fever and got a virus and been vomiting. And
good Lord.
Stomach's killing her, and A.W. got sick. Going down, and he had the same thing.
What, did they eat something?
I don't know. A good many of them on the trip got the virus.
Well, incidentally, do you plan to, when we go to St. Louis, are you going to go on down to the wedding if you decide?
No, I don't think so. I think I'll come on back.
You got a full day, you got an easy day, but you got a lot of Jewish people to see tomorrow.
Who's that?
Well, you're going to see Arthur Goldberg and some of those people at 11, and then you're going to see these... a whole group of, at that same time, of these United Jewish Appeal people. There are a bunch of them in. I've been working on that little statement for you.
Why are we seeing them?
I think Arthur Goldberg is the one that...
He arranging both groups?
Well, it's one group, and he's just staying... the three or four of them he's keeping behind to see you. They're the fattest, the fat cats among them.
What's the purpose, though?
I don't know the total purpose of it. I checked this schedule out yesterday I was at the White House and noticed that and just checked into it to find out who they were because I wanted to get a statement for you. And Mike Feldman, I finally found out from him, he said it was the UJA, United Jewish Appeal Group, touring the White House, and then you were going to say a few words to them, and then Goldberg was going to stay behind with three of them. And... otherwise, it's a pretty light day. Incidentally, Mr. President, your decision on that Cuba thing, I think, was definitely the right one, because all the headlines that I've been able to read either commend you for it or say you didn't go far enough. So I think that was a wise decision that you made. And incidentally, have you seen the Herald Tribune?
No.
Well, they got two stories in there, one on Walter and the LBJ Company, and the other one is Tom Wicker.
Not in the Herald Tribune.
It wouldn't be in the Herald Tribune, would it? Well, anyway, it's an assessment of...
Betancourt, I imagine, whatever his name is.
Bonfidi is the one,
yeah,
whatever that
name
is.
That's what I guess.
Or Walter Jenkins. The other one is... the honeymoon over between you and the press group. I thought it was by Tom Wicker, but I guess I'm wrong.
Tom Wicker's got one in there on that in the New York Times.
Yeah.
Saying Johnson's press relations.
Yeah,
maybe that's the one you're thinking of.
Yeah, I read that. I thought it was in the Herald Tribune, but obviously I'm wrong.
There's Tom Wicker and the other. That wasn't a bad story. They had one leak in it by Ted Zorns.
Yeah. That actually, it could have been a lot worse. I think it's a pretty fair assessment. Of the situation.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think the papers have been real good. I've been watching television today and watched Goldwater, and I watched Romney, and they really made Romney look bad. They asked him about you, and he said, well, Johnson is riding off in all directions at one time. Nobody knows whether he's a left-wing conservative or a right-wing liberal. You can't pin him down. And then this Spivak, after he began to talk about... why he thought that. Then Spivak said, well, Governor, what are you? And then he wouldn't be pinned down, and it made him look awful, awful bad. It was He boxed in, as Mary Margaret said, he painted himself into a corner, and then he couldn't get out of it himself. Because he couldn't, he refused to identify what he was, how he would characterize himself. And Spivak said, well, if you're asking that about the president, can't he ask the same question about you?
What did he say?
Well, he didn't say, he just smiled and said, well, I don't really, I think you have to catalog me by the issues that I stand on, not by any description. It made him look awful bad. He just, he didn't do well at all.
He was, well, what did Goldwater do?
Well, Goldwater was saying that your policy in Cuba is too weak, and that we should have definitely sent the Marines in to turn that water on, and he thinks that we should set up a blockade tomorrow. He said, I thought we had a blockade, but obviously we haven't, and stop all British ships and French ships and Soviet ships and anybody's ship that comes in there. And this was his thesis. So on balance in today's television, it was very good. Romney, to anybody who watched that program, he obviously didn't make a good impression. I think there's any question about it. Good and Goldwater, of course, sounds more ridiculous every time he opens his mouth. So I wouldn't think this was too bad a day at all, sir, as far as the news was concerned. You haven't seen any of the papers then, I take it?
No, I didn't want to read them. I just get so damn depressed. John had a big interview. Andy Johnson all over Texas about how I forced Kilgore out and how cool he was and how...
John did?
Yeah, how he wouldn't come to see me and how he wouldn't let me come to see him yesterday. It was obvious given out by his office, but wasn't quoting him directly. But I called him and had a nice visit with him and talked to him about 30 minutes about naming Don Yarbrough's dad-in-law and said, you and Nellie want to come by. I wish you'd come by and spend the afternoon with us. We'd be glad to see you. He said, well, I'd love to, but we're going down to Floresville. So we're building a house down there, and then they talked about the house. Said, we got to pick some brick for it and pick some paper and stuff. I expect we better go on. We had our plan. But they asked Pierce Salinger if I talked to Conlin. He said yes, and they asked Conlin. And Conlin said no. So then about 10 minutes later, Conlin's secretary came out and said, yes, they'd talked since they'd asked the governor, which is a big lie. I said the governor was rather cool, and the governor went on to Floresville, and Johnson was wanting to come see the governor, but the governor wouldn't see him.
God Almighty.
And all the articles were that Jack Cox was going to be elected now because I'd kept Kilgore out, and Conley and Kilgore were mad, and the conservatives are all mad. And it's going to get John in a hell of a shape. He just keeps on.
If John keeps it's going,
he's
going to
get beat. That's exactly what he's going to do, listening to those dumbbells.
Because that the Republican primary could drain off enough votes, and John, some of these labor guys and some of these other people who are Johnson people are going to say, well, screw you, Governor, if that's
so what... Walter said that John told him that he wanted to ask me directly to come by the mansion, going to the funeral, so I waited. He didn't ask me. Walter came running up to me and we drove off, and the sweet guy is, and said, would you mind John riding out to the airport with you? Don't you want me to ask him to ride with you? I said, no, I don't think so. I didn't ask him because I thought that he'd decline again, you see,
yeah,
and leak another story. So I decided I'd be just as cold and hard and different as he is, and let's just see who survives.
John is listening to a lot of these people who, so I don't understand it, Mr. President. John is simply the governor of Texas, and you're the president of the United States, and there's a damn big difference in that. And if it hadn't dawned on his immature, young, untutored aides, it will one of these days. And the guys he's listening to aren't very smart.
That's exactly what you ought to tell Frank Irvin the first time he talked to
him. I'd be delighted to tell Frank
Irvin. Just tell him it.
Because he's listening at boys like Howard Rose and Scotty Sayers, and my God, if he's listening to those, I don't know that he is. I haven't had
No, he's listening to pure 100% Republicans. I think Shivers got more influence with him than we got.
Well, if John doesn't watch out, he can be in real trouble down there if he tries to denounce you down there. Because there are a lot of people that I think
I can take every Mexican in the state and every nigger in the state.
No questions about it. And also, I think you could unleash the labor boys down there, too. I don't understand, John. John is a stubborn man. He gets real stubborn. And he gets buoyed up by some of these people who tell him what a great man he is, and he believes it. Just shameful. But incidentally, the first question that Spivak asked Romney today, it said, Governor, that it's being said in pretty much all over the country that it's a waste of time for the Republicans to even put up a candidate against President Johnson. Do you feel that way? And Romney said, no, I think we can win if we tell the people what the issues are. And then later on, Romney said Spivak said to him, said, well, now, Governor, that the polls show that the people in this country overwhelmingly believe that President Johnson is doing a first-rate job. Wherever you go, the polls say that. And Romney's answer to that was, well, that's because he's trying to be all things to all people. And that was his answer. So it made him look pretty bad. Spivak was putting the needle in him pretty strong. It was a pretty good show. Pretty good show. Did you talk to Joe Kilgore while you were down there?
No, I wouldn't talk to him at all. He ever calls me, I'm going to refer him to Walter, and I'm going to tell Walter, tell him I'm afraid to talk to you, Joe, because I read about it in the paper.
Yeah, when I talk to Jim, my other conversation with Jim Mathis says that the conversation is in Texas, that Joe Kilgore is, it's his conversation with you has just been repeated verbatim, according to Joe Kilgore. All over
the Kilgore, though, didn't have it. He didn't talk to Walter. I wouldn't talk to him the day he withdrew.
Yeah.
I made him talk to Walter.
Well, I understand. I don't understand these people, Mr. President. It's beyond me. I can't figure out what John is thinking. Why a man wants to have an opponent is something I just don't understand. Why, deliberately goes out of his way to affront people that can support him. I cannot understand that kind of reasoning at all. Not at all.
This guy Mackay had a mean story in the Houston Chronicle.
He did?
Yeah, said that Johnson had held up Ralph Yarber, Don Yarber's father-in-law, and one of his aides said he just hadn't gotten to it, that he was too busy, but that other sources said he was holding him up as penalty because Yarber ran against Conley, which is a damn lie, and which is not true. And I want you to tell Everett Cogger in the morning that's the first lie they've written, and they better check that with me before they go writing lies, or me and the Chronicle ain't going to get along very long.
I'll tell him. This is a story about Bill Mackay.
Yep.
All right.
Saying I was deliberately holding up his appointment. Now, his appointment hadn't come to me. I've got a big bunch of commissions to name, and they continue until they do. And I've been in Cuba, and I've been in Panama, and I've been in Cyprus, and I've been a few other things. And I'm surprised the Chronicle would try to start that kind of a fight. I was holding up Don Yarber's dad-in-law. That ill behooves them to do that. That is their first act of graciousness. I just tell him that the president don't appreciate it one goddamn bit.
No, I'll call him tomorrow and tell him. I'll be glad to tell him that. Mr. President, I hope we can get Buzz over there as quickly as we can. I think that I had written a little note to you. I think that Buzz can be useful in two things. I think he can write major speeches and work on major speeches. But I think the most useful thing Buzz can do, and I was suggesting, that he be in charge of working up initiatives for you every week, that every day there's something that can be done that's a newsworthy event. And I've suggested that we meet as a group on every Friday afternoon to work out our objectives and what we're trying to push forward through the next week, and that Buzz can work out these initiatives, for want of a better word. There are all these things during the week that can be done to advance the image and the objective that we want to do. And this is an area where we don't have anybody doing this. And divorce Buzz from all the day-to-day operation of the White House so he doesn't get bogged down in any the operational procedures, but leave him free just... You can move Buzz up in that Reardon's office up there, which should be vacant. And I'd put him upstairs in Reardon's office where he can get away from the mainstream of the day-to-day operations. And
has Reardon moved yet?
I think Reardon moves out Tuesday or Wednesday, sir, is what Walter told me, because I asked him the same question. But it's a nice, beautiful office, and he can sit in there and think and do these things that we haven't been able to do. And I think it would be very, very helpful if he just took on those two chores, on major speeches and those daily initiatives, where we can make news and get in the papers favorably. If Buzz would do that, it'd be worth his weight in gold. And leave him free of all the operational part of the White House.
All right, I'd write that out tomorrow, description.
I've got it written out in the
job description. So I can sit down and talk to him about it.
I've got it written out, I'll flesh it out more. And he's ready to, I talked to him today and he said he was winding up his business.
Who's got my San Luis speech written?
Well, I've got a draft from Schlesinger that I've been going over today, and I talked to Buzz about it, and Buzz has Schlesinger's draft, and he promises me that by tomorrow at noontime he'll have a finished draft combining his and Schlesinger's. Schlesinger's written you what I think is a pretty good speech. Its basic theme is the city, the urban voter, and your the thing that you want to do for the city, which is combined in your housing bill. I think it's a pretty damn good speech. It's well written. It's got some good stuff in there. And Buzz thought it had some possibilities too. Of course, when you get two authors working on it.
Hey, Buzz will rewrite the whole damn thing.
Well,
he ought to do it. If it's good, why you let Buzz touch it?
Well, it's a good question.
Why did you then?
Well, because I thought Buzz could improve it. There are some parts in there that have to come out. There's some quotations from historical figures in there that I don't think you would want to use in the speech. But the basic part of the speech is good. The basic part.
Well, what's the lead? Johnson advocates bigger share of economy for urban voter.
No, Johnson advocates the urban community as the new America. Talking about all and making the cities decent places to live in and to grow in, because most of our people live in them now.
Mm-hmm. That's a good line. That's a good line right there.
And
making the cities decent places to live in, because that's where most people live.
And it's not bad. It's not a bad speech. For a first draft, I think it's very good.
You got Schlesinger, you working on anything else?
Yes, sir. I got him working on the California speech on the 21st.
When is he leaving? It's 1st of March?
That's supposedly.
I'd give him 3 or 4 more.
He says he would take them. And see, I told Buzz, I said it's very important that great chunks of Schlesinger's speech remain intact. Otherwise, he won't write any more for us. And this is the first one. He produced it, and he produced it on time. I asked him to deliver it to me on Saturday, and he did. He delivered it on time, and within about 150 words of the total length. So if we could get a speech a month out of Schlesinger, I think it'd be excellent. I was impressed with it.
He's leaving, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's leaving, but he's still available for speech writing.
You say what?
Well, he told you he was.
I don't know.
Well, all he can do is say no. I have no compunctions about asking him.
I'd ask him if he's going to be available.
All right. So we got that now. So that St. Louis speech will be in shape by tomorrow afternoon.
When do we leave St. Louis? Friday noon?
No, yes, sir, about noon, because we're supposed to arrive at 3 o'clock. Now, Cliff Carter and Kilduff have just gotten back from their advance, and I'm going over with... Well, he and Cliff both went out there. slip, both went out there. He's been going on a lot of advances. And then I've got Jerry Bruno, who Ken O'Donnell says is the best advanced man they've got around here. I don't know him, but I'm taking Ken's word for that. He claims he's excellent. And I'm working with him on this land and people tour that we're trying to put together. And I hope by Tuesday I'll have a fairly good idea of what we want.
How long does that take, a week?
Yes, sir, it'll take a week. Because you go from coast to coast. We can do it in shorter time than that, but I think it'd be a mistake. We're going to have several alternatives, 4 days to 7 days.
Sure leave some time to run the government during those days.
Yes, sir. Yes. Well, this is just the preliminary on the thing. We're going to take a good, solid look at it, and it may be we'll have to revamp the whole thing.
Freeman got any places in it?
Yes, sir, he has. I've talked with him about that. He's got some good places in there, I think, work out fine. I've had two sessions with Udall on it. And
Will Udall write speeches?
Well, I'm sure he will. I haven't asked him, but I'm sure he will. There are a lot of these places.
He's a pretty good speechwriter.
I understand that. I understand Wirtz is a pretty good speechwriter too.
Yeah, they are.
Wirtz and this fellow Charlie Murphy. I don't know either. I mean, I've never seen anything Murphy's written, but I understand he's good.
Okay, you're in charge of it. Is Mary Margaret there?
Yes, sir.
Let me talk to her.
Yes, second. Yes,
I called up to talk to her. I didn't want to talk to you, Jack.
Hello, Mark.
He always thinks I call up and talk to him. Tell him I didn't want to talk to him.
He did. Well, how are you feeling?
Pretty good. You came down the other night and ran off.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Why didn't you stay till Lee went home?
Oh, when was it?
When you met him.
Oh, you mean when I met him?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, he said he had to go to a meeting, and I thought, well, you know, I didn't, an hour or 2 hours, I didn't know that might be a long thing. He'd be coming in real late, so.
He didn't have to go. I didn't even invite him. I expect him to go with you, but he just got up there like a big shot and got right in on Cuba.
Well, he told me that he had to go to a meeting on Cuba, so I thought, oh, that means a long thing, and I better get on home.
How's Miss Linda?
She's just doing fine. She's sleeping.
You don't still call her Courtney, do you?
Well, a little bit.
You do.
But she's a fine girl.
Well, you call her Linda, son?
Well, Jack does.
Yeah, well, I say, what about you, though?
Well, I just sort of got in the habit of Courtney.
Well, you better change, then. You better give me equal time. That's only fair. Don't you think that's fair that you give me part of the time?
I think so. I try.
Miss Kellum was sure sad.
Oh, I'm just sick about that. I'm just...
Hope you wired him.
I did. I wired him, as if it was Friday, and sent some flowers for the funeral. Wired him yesterday.
Jack, I saw your boy's birth certificate down in my desk, and I didn't have any idea you was 32 years old.
No, I'm 31.
What is that?
You saw my what?
Your birth certificate in your desk.
Where?
You left down the ranch.
Well, gosh, I better get it.
Said you was born in...
1932.
That's right.
I'll be 32 in September.
I thought you was 28.
No, sir.
You stayed 28 for 5 years.
No, I didn't. I've never lied about my age. But I better get a hold of that. I didn't know I'd left it down there.
Well, yeah, you left everything around. You got stuff scattered, all kinds of stuff.
Well, is it down at the ranch? I wonder why. I guess I applied for a passport or something. I must have left it there. Well, I better get a hold of that.
Yeah, better go down there and get it.
Oh,
you haven't got anybody to take care of Linda, have you?
No, I don't. But Jack's away from home so much, I'm afraid I'm going to have to get somebody. So I can go, too.
Well, I thought you had Norman's wife.
Well, I do, but she works for me during the day, 5 days a week. And she'll babysit for me at night. But I don't have anybody to leave her with, you know, when I go out of town. I need to try to line up people who can, you know, come spend the night, that sort of thing.
Heard what Jack just ran off and left me this week, left me by myself. I took my own cold all weekend.
Oh, you poor thing. It didn't take Marie or somebody?
No, Marie had a date. She couldn't. Ask him if he's going to St. Louis so I'll know ahead of time not, so I can get Gene or Sammy or some of them to go with me.
Well, he said he is. I wish he wouldn't.
Is he going or not?
I think he is. He wants to say one more word to you.
Mr. President, at 10 o'clock tonight, the NBC has that hour-long white paper called Cuba, the Missile Crisis, that you may want to see or may not want to see.
It's on now. It's about 10, isn't it?
No, sir. It's 9:15.
What is the Missile Crisis? What,
well, I don't
a
know
year ago?
Yes, sir. That confrontation in 1962, I suppose, is what they're talking about. Huntley's going to narrate it.
This time it's Bob Baskin had a mean story. Said Johnson's hard on domestic policy, like he twists Kilgore's wrist and he won't let him run. And he's tough. He shows people's income tax. And he does this with Bobby Baker. He leaks stories. But he's a soft on Cuba and he's soft on Panama. And that's what he said. I turned over Texas papers to you, and that's what Baskin said.
God almighty.
You seen Baskin?
No, sir. I have not seen him in I guess, 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
In the first place, I didn't call Conley or Kilgore. And such conversations as Kilgore had, he called. He talked to other people when they withdrew. He just told us. We didn't tell him. And he ought to be crybabying about it. If he's big enough to be senator, he's big enough to resist any pressure that was put on him, and we didn't put any on him.
Well, that's, of course, I guess Joe Kilgore and those people are trying to figure out some way to show that their hero why he didn't run and have their blaming you for it.
That's right. They want to help the Republicans. They want to get the issue straight up.
Well, that's going to mess can cost John the election.
Well, you better tell Frank. You better tell Everett Collier. There's a good deal of resentment among the Johnson forces at the lakeside of Conley's office against him. And if they do get split, and why, it's really going to be a bloodlet. That's what I tell Collier to write a paragraph on.
I'm going to tell Collier because Bill Stephen, every time I send him, ask him anything, boy, he has it in the paper the next day. I sent him Harry Province's editorial on Don Yarbrough. And by God, the next day it appeared in the Chronicle, guest editorial, and they reprinted all of Province's stuff. So Stephen has been real good about it. Now, I better talk with him and talk with Everett Collier. I think I'll talk to Everett and I'll talk to Bill both. Tell him about
be careful, they'll quote you. That's what you got to be careful about. Not let them tell anybody they're talking to you.
Yes, sir.
Say, now, if you mention me, my usefulness to you is an end. I've helped the Chronicle and the National Bank of Commerce, too. That's where I'd put it. I've helped them plenty. But I just want to tell you this. If Mr. Kilgore called up, I want to talk to the president's in the Security Council. And he wanted to know about us, wanted him to run, so we told him 1-1, we didn't think he could win. The poll showed he only had 18%. Number two, we didn't think we ought to have a big fight, but the president wasn't going to tell him what to do. That's all there was to it.
Bill,
all this
let me tell Mackay's story in paper today.
Today.
And saying that you had been ignored by, I mean...
No, yesterday. Said that I was holding up Don Yarbrough's daddy-in-law's appointment because Don was running against John. And my aide said, quote, he just hadn't gotten to it. But other sources say, quote, Johnson is holding it up. Now, that's a made damn lie. I don't believe my aides told him anything because they didn't know anything, number one. And I don't believe other sources said that either. Because I don't think anybody knows that he even considered it. I don't know whether I ought to appoint him or not. He's a good friend of mine. Served well, faithfully through the years. May look like kicking John, but I think maybe I ought to appoint him. Ought to fire him. I think that'd cause him more trouble than hiring.
I do indeed. I think if you didn't appoint him, it'd cause you more embarrassment than if you did. It'd cause John more embarrassment. More embarrassment.